Today, the Daf Yomi is the Gemara in Baba Kama, Daf Nun Tes. We continue to learn for the safety of the Chayalim, for the return of the Chatufim. The hostages should be returned speedily and in good health. There should be no more Korbanos. Nebuch has been a very difficult couple of days. Too many Korbanos. B'ezus Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu should give Tzal Hatzlacha. There shouldn't be any more injuries. There should be no more Korbanos. B'ezus Hashem, there should be Shalom HaKla Yisrael. Now, we pick up in the Gemara on Nun Tes and Aleph, 11 lines from the top with the words Omer Abaye. Abaye tells us, Rav Yossi Aglili and Rav Yishmol Omer Dover Echad. That Rav Yossi Aglili and Rav Yishmol both said the same thing. What is Rav Yossi Aglili? Rav Yossi Aglili, Hodi Amar. And that's what we learned in yesterday's shir. We have at the bottom of Nun Ches Amud Beis that we had said that if an animal came along and ate chaziz, ochlo chaziz, which we said was shachlis, which was newly grown grain. It was very immature, but growing grain. So Yossi Glili Omer, that the owner of the animal that ate this chaziz, has to pay nidon b'mishuyer shabo. And Rashi explained, that meant, roin es hanosor lefi mashatala kol aruga v'yaruga v'yimei hakotzir mishali. And according to Yossi, you see this roe, how much it's worth, not by looking at it now, but when you eventually harvest all the other rows, how much they bring in, and then you pay that same amount for this row. So that's a large amount of money. We had said that the kula that could be for Rav Yossi Glili would be in case there was a blight that came along and none of the other rows grew. And then you'd pay nothing for this row as well because the blight would have affected this row too. But under normal circumstances, all the other rows grow very well. So just like they're all going to grow, you pay for the value of those rows, you pay for the value of the row that was destroyed by the animal as if it was still there and grew, and that is the opinion of Yossi Glili. So Abaye tells us that this din of Yossi Glili is the same din as Rabbi Yishmol. Yossi Glili, Rabbi Yishmol say the same thing. So Rabbi Yossi Glili, Hod Amarin, that's what we just brought down. And Rabbi Yishmol, that's based upon the following Brisa where he says the same thing to Tanya. In the Brisa, we have two opinions, Rabbi Yishmol and Rabbi Kiva. The first opinion is Rabbi Yishmol, and it says the famous pasuk that we had many times, Kiaver Ish, Sode Ocherem, Vishilaches Biiro, Vier Biste Acher, Umeitav Sodehu, Umeitav Karmo Yishalem. So it says, Meitav Sodehu, Umeitav Karmo Yishalem. You have to pay for the best. So Rabbi Yishmol says this means, Meitav sodeu shol nizak, umeitav kameo shol nizak. You pay from the best sodeh and from the best kerem of the nizak, the one who was damaged. You look at his best fields, and that's what you have to pay. Now we'll define this in a moment. What does it mean according to our Gemara? The best of his fields, the best of his vineyards. Divrei Rabbi Yishmol, that's Rabbi Yishmol's opinion. They pay for the best of the nizak. We'll see though exactly what that means. Along comes Rabbi Akiva and disagrees. Rabbi Akiva Omer, Rabbi Akiva holds lo ba'a cause of the pasuk meitav sadeh meitav kama yishalem is only coming to teach us elo legavos l'nizokin min ha'idiyas. It comes to tell us that you go collect to pay the nizak from the best of the mazik. You go and take the mazik's items and you go and pay them from the mazik's best land, whatever the damage is to the nizak. So let's say it's $100. So you can give him a field that's worth $100. It's a small field because it's a very good yield field. Or you give him a larger field that has a poor yield, but it's also worth $100. So most people would rather have a small, very good field. There's less plowing to do, less work to do, rather than a larger, inferior field. So what Rabbi Akiva is telling us is that the mazik has to give him from the idiots, from the best field that he has. So this is the machlokas, Rabbi Shmuel or Rabbi Akiva. We had this earlier in the Masechta. Rabbi Shmuel says, you give him from the best of the nizak, and Rabbi Akiva says, you give him from the best of the mazik. Now, let's focus in on only Rabbi Shmuel at this point and say, what does it mean from the best of the nizak? So the Gemara first says, don't assume that it means like what Rabbi Idi Bar Oven said. Don't assume that Rabbi Shmuel should be understood the way Rabbi Idi Bar Oven understood him. Because the other Rabbi Idi Bar Oven said, Kigon sha'ochla aruga ben arugos, the animal, the mazik's animal, ate from a row from amongst the arugas of the nizak, and we don't know, Rav Idi Bar Oven said, what level of produce that was, what type of a field it was. Was it a good one or a bad row? We don't know if it was a very weak row or it was a very good row. In other words, it was stationed in a field that was some good rows and some bad rows. And we don't know if the row that was eaten was a good row or a bad row. And therefore, Rav Idi Bar Oven says that Rabbi Shmuel holds, you have to give from the idiots, it means, to Amar, Kum Shalem Shmeina. You have to assume that he ate from the best row, not from the worst row. So you have to go and pay, according to Ravidi Baravin, kum shalem shmeina, go pay for a very good row. B'meitav the ikahashta, based on what there is right now. Look around and see what there is, and that's mistoma, what the animal ate. Now, we don't like this pshat. Ravidi Baravin gave this pshat, but the Gemara doesn't like this pshat. Abaye doesn't like this pshat. Because the Abaye says, how could that be? You're telling me, the b'meitav d'ikahashta, he has to go pay? The hachi lo amrina. We wouldn't say this. I disagree with you. Why? Because my taima. What's the reasoning? Because normally we say, hamotzi mechaver lo araya. The mazik should be able to go to the nizik and say, prove to me that my animal ate from your best field. And then I'll pay you for the best field. But until then, I'm assuming he ate from the worst field. Yes, I know my animal ate something. But we see the destroyed row, and my animal ate it, but we don't know whether that was a good row or was a bad row. So Ravidi Baravin says, assume it's the best row. And Abaye says, no, you don't have the right to assume it's the best row. It is Hamotzi Mechaver, all of a riot. And therefore, Abaye doesn't understand Rabbi Yishmael the way Ravidi Baravin did. How does Abaye therefore understand Rabbi Yishmael? So Ella B'meitav D'Lekameh. It means you have to go and give him from the best that are there right now, meaning, Umay Nihu, what is this? Kihech disolik, what is going to grow from these other rows. As Rashi says, B'yamos HaKotzir, we'll wait till the harvest time comes, and then we'll see how much these rows are worth then. That's what it means from the best. Meitav Sadehu, at the time of the harvest, that's the best time. Not right now, when it's not yet harvestable, when it's not yet mature, and it won't be worth so much. So Meitav Sadehu, Meitav Karmo, according to Abaye's understanding of Yishmael, is teaching us this din. That you go and evaluate what it will be worth, not what it's worth right now, but it will what it would have been worth when it would have been harvested, and therefore, since this row was destroyed, you pay for what it will become if it had been harvested. That is Abaye's understanding of Rabbi Shmuel. Now we go back, we had in yesterday's shir, and we'll quote it now, Omamar, we learned in yesterday's shir, that the opinion of Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda was, he said, Omer Mishum Rabbi Shimon, he said over the name of Rabbi Shimon, Bamedva Mamurim, under what situation did Rabbi Shimon say his din? Sha'achla luve gifanim v'yichore teinim. He said that you have to go and evaluate the row that was destroyed amidst the other rows, amidst the Shishim methodology that we discussed yesterday, that's only when it ate the lulave gifanim and the yichore teinim, the branches of the vine and the branches of the fig tree, but not if there were grapes or figs on them. So therefore, we're now going to make that implication. Hosmadar, if there were grapes that are beginning to grow, Rashi says, li'achar sheparchu anovim, after you have the grapes starting to grow, they are originally smadar, v'lulavim kodim sheparchu, and they're just called lulavim branches before you have this growth. So you actually have, first you have these vines, just the vines, the branches themselves. Then the earliest grapes are called smadar. And then you have another type of a grape when the smadar matures a little bit to become boser. And then finally you have the full-fledged anovim afterwards. So these are the stages, if you wish, of the vine development. So Rabbi Shimon had said that when do you do this evaluation amongst the others, comma, it's worth in the Shishim methodology, that's only when it ate the lulavei gifanim, the branches, pre any growth of fruit, pre smadar, pre pagim, and certainly pre anovim, before it reached any of those stages. So it's only in the vine stage, it's only in the branch stage. So therefore, Rabbi Shimon's opinion, according to this understanding of Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda, is that he only said this din for the vines. Hasmadar, but once it reaches the stages of being a grape, an immature grape, but not, you know, if anywhere near a fully grown grape, this most immature stage, so then, ro'onosan kilu anovim omdos libatzer. Then we view it as if it is going to eventually be a full-fledged grape, and when it will be picked then, so we say, that's how you evaluate it now, that's how you pay now for what it will eventually become. So that's from the ratio, that's the implication of the ratio. But then, the Gemara says, Eima Seifa, keep on reading. Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda continued to say in the name of Rabbi Shimon, but, Ochlo Pagim Obose, if the animal ate Pagim, now Pagim has to deal with figs, so it's not really in our discussion right now. Obosa, that's an even more mature stage after the smadar, before it becomes a full-fledged grape, it is the boser stage. Again, You start off with nothing. That's just the lulav and gefanim. And then you have the smadar stage, a very, very immature grape. Then you have a slightly more mature grape, but still immature, called the boser stage. And then you eventually have the anovim, the full-fledged grapes. So the second part of that brisa said that if the animal ate either pagim, which is by figs, or boser, which is by grapes, this in-between stage of the grape, not smadar, but not yet full-grown anovim, then who the rowin osan kilu anovim omnusli botzer? Only in that situation do we view it as if it is going to be eventually picked, and therefore you pay for it only in this boser stage as if it was a fully ripe grape. Implication being, in the earlier stage than bosar, in the smadar stage, or smadar, no, rowin osan kamihi yofa, kamihi yofa. You look at the whole row and the whole field, and you say, how much is it worth with this row intact? How much is it worth without this row intact? In other words, you don't view it as when it will be sold, when it's fully grown. So therefore, we seem to have a mutually contradictory implication from the Reisha and the Sefer of this Brisa. So Omer Ravina, Ravina says, no. Kuroch Utani, lump them together. As Rashi says, Hosif Smadar Imaim B'mishnah. Just break it up into pre-any fruit stage, pre-P-R-E, before it's any fruit stage, when it's just Lulavei Gefanim, and then post-any grape development, either the smadar, boser, or anovim stage. Then, Ravina tells us, you go and say the following. Kroch v'tani, you lump all the actual grape growths, the smadar, the boser, and the anovim together as one din, and the pre-grape stage, the lulavei gefanim stage, as a separate din. And that's what Ravina tells us. Krochu tani, lump them together in the following way. When do we say, you look at the land, how much it's worth with this row, how much it's worth without this row? That's only for the lulavei gefanim stage. That's only bizman she'ochlo lulavei gefanim v'yichurei tenim. That's only when it aged the pure branches without any growths of either figs or grapes on them at all. But once it reaches Avol Ochla Smadar, the most premature type of grape, and certainly the pagan stage of the figs, or the boser stage, the later stage of grape, certainly Ro'on Osan Kilu Anovim Omdos Libotzer. Then we view it as if they were fully mature, and we evaluate them based upon that being fully grown and mature grapes that are about to be plucked, rather than these half-mature earlier forms of the grapes. Now, based upon Rav Shimon Yehuda explaining Rav Shimon in this way, so then he hachid Gemara says, Rav Shimon Yehuda, hain Rav Yeshua. So then Rav Yeshua said the same thing. Rav Yeshua said, you look at the grapes now as if they were fully mature when they're going to be picked. They're not fully mature now. So Rav Shimon ben Yehuda is explaining Rav Shimon in exactly the same way that Rav Yeshua had said it. So what's the difference between Rav Shimon Yehuda saying over Rav Shimon and Rav Yeshua? So Gemara says, no, there's a slight difference between them. The difference between Rabbi Yeshua's din and Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda in the name of Rabbi Shimon, Ika benayu kichesh gufna. Rashi explains kichesh gufna, linakos bin atashlumin, to deduct something from the payment that the mazik has to give to the nizak, mash yachishu hanovim begufanim. Again, in the stage when you ate these lulavei gufanim, so you're paying a certain amount. But ultimately, when you're going to look at this later on, the gefanim are going to become weaker because you have fruit growing on them. The fact that you have grapes laden on them weakens these branches. So they're not going to go up in value as much. You have to deduct something for the weakening, if you wish, of the gefanim. That's what Rashi tells us. L'nakos v'na teshlumim. You have to deduct a little bit from the amount that the mazik has to pay the nizak. Mashi yachishu anovim b'gefanim. That no longer is going to be here because the anovim were taken off. So im yamdu shom ad habotzi, if they lasted until the time of the harvest, so then they would weaken the branches. Shetomid yonkim lichlu chagefen, because they constantly are drinking up some of the sap. They're being nourished from some of the sap, the moisture of the gefen. So therefore, the fact that these grapes aren't here now, so that somehow makes less of a ruining, if you wish, of the vine itself. And therefore, that kichesh gufna has to be taken into account, and you pay a little bit less because the vines are a little bit stronger than would be if they had fruits on them. That is the difference between Rabbi Shimon Yehuda in the name of Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yoshua. But the Gemara says that's the difference. V'lo Masayme, but we don't know which one said which. We don't know which one says you do take into account the diminution in the value of the vine. Which one said yes, we do, and which one said no, we don't. We don't know that. But Abaye comes along and tells us yes, we do. Abaye Amar absolutely Masayme Masayme. This is like a lashon of sakoyi sakel. It's a lashon of exuberance. Certainly. So Abaye is telling us we absolutely know which one of these two mandiyamas, Rabbi Yeshua or Rabbi Shimon, said that we take into account the weakening of the vine, that he no longer has that weakening, and therefore he ducks a little bit less in terms of the amount that he has to pay. And whose opinion is that? Mantana dechayish lekicheish gufna. Who is the one that says we do take that into account? And in fact, is Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda in the name of Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda, this is the opinion of Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda. Where do we see that? Because the Tanya, we learn in the Braisa, Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda, Omer Mishum, Rabbi Shimon ben Menasseh. Here, Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda says it over in the name of Rabbi Shimon ben Menasseh in the following situation. Now, I want to point out before we do this that we shouldn't think that this, the Gemara is in any way callous, Rahman al-Islam, to the horrific crime of a woman being Rahman al-Islam assaulted and being Rahman al-Islam raped. So the Gemara is not talking about the rishus of such a person. The Gemara is not talking about how HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to give this person an appropriate punishment for the horrific thing that he did. The Gemara is just talking about the pure financial payments involved. We see this all the time. It tells about Geneva, tells about people that are stealing, a Ganav, a Gazlan, listen to Zun. It doesn't say that's a terrible person. Of course it's a terrible person. Gemara is not interested right now in the character of the person. Gemara is not interested in the Olam HaEmes that this person is going to get or the Gehenna that this person is going to get. We're dealing with financial penalties. So all it discusses is the financial penalties. So now, the Tanya, we learn in this Braisa, Rav Shimon ben Yehuda says in the name of Rav Shimon ben Menasseh about a woman, Rachman Lissan, has been assaulted. This oness, this woman who's been assaulted, she's been violated, she's been mebuch raped. So, eino mishalim es hatzar, b'pnei sofo litzar tachas bala. There are numerous tzars that this Rachmona Litzlan, this woman who's been raped, is going to be entitled to because of the financial penalty that we're dealing with in terms of being assaulted. So she's thrown to the ground. She's Rachmona Litzlan beaten. So all of that, of course the rapist has to pay those damages. Of course, there's no question. But we're dealing now, the Gemara says, with the actual breaking of her hymen, with the actual breaking of the basulin. So the Gemara says that for the pain of the breaking of the basulin, not the fact that he did it very roughly, of course he'll pay if he did it very roughly. Of course he'll pay if he hurt her. Of course he'll pay. That's a different type of nezek. Here we're just dealing with the pure nezek of the breaking of the basulin. Every woman, b'ezras Hashem, when she gets married, her basulin is going to be broken by her husband. So that pain, the simple pain of the breaking of the basulin, so that is what Rav Shimon ben Yehuda says in the name of Rav Shimon ben Menasseh. The rapist doesn't pay for that simple pain of the breaking of the basulin. Onus eino mishalim es hatzar, because eventually she would suffer that tzar with her husband. B'nei shesofu litzar tachas bala. So that very specific limited pain, Rav Shimon ben Menasseh says you don't have to go and pay. Or the other pain from the assault, Rachmana Litzlan, such terrible barbaric behavior, of course you pay for that pain. And of course you're going to get punished by HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the actions that you did. Here we're just talking about the pure financial penalty. And this one small concept or aspect of the financial penalty, the pure breaking of the basulin, which she eventually would have to have suffer anyway with her husband, so therefore there is no compensation for that pain. That's what Rav Shimon ben Yehuda says in the name of Rav Shimon ben Menasseh. Chacham disagree. Amulah, the Chacham say to Rav Shimon ben Menasseh. He said over to Rav Shimon Yehuda, saying over the name of Shimon ben Menasseh. Ain't no domin nevelas b'rotzon nevelas b'onis. No, even the actual breaking of the basulin, there's no comparison between a compassionate husband who's trying to do things in the most b'chabadika and non-painful way with his wife, as opposed to Rachmana Litzlan, a brutal assault where he doesn't care at all. This person's a horrible person, this rapist. So the Chacham say, no, even the pure breaking of the basulin is different between Rachmana Litzlan, a rapist, and the husband. Now, what do we see from here? We see the Rav Shimon ben Yehuda saying over the name of Shimon ben Menasseh, so Rav Shimon ben Yehuda holds this, so he is of the opinion that we do deduct something because there would be pain anyway. So therefore, that small aspect of the basulin payment, that doesn't apply. Similarly, when you take off the grapes, so the vine will now be a little bit stronger, so that must be the opinion of Shimon Yehuda. In the name of Rabbi Shimon, that opinion is the one that says we take into account the small less diminution in the value of the wine because there are no grapes on it right now. Okay. So therefore, we've associated, we've answered, the Bayit says, Masaymeh, Masaymeh, we know now that that is the one that holds this, and Rabbi Yeshua doesn't hold from this. Similarly, Abaye says, Omer Abaye, this opinion is also the opinion of other Tanoim. Hani Tanoi, Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda, Amud Dov Recha. This opinion that we just brought down, the Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda, in the name of Shimon ben Manasseh, and the name of Rabbi Shimon, so this opinion, that you take into account this slight, less damage, you also see this in two other Tanoim. Who are these two? This is Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda HaDamar. That's what we just brought down. And who are these other Tanoim? Hani Tanoim Mahi. So this is, we learned in the Braisa, the Tanya. We have two opinions here. In Rechmon HaLitzlan, we have Ki Yinatzu Anashim, the Nog Fu Yishar Ra, Yatzu Yiladea, Lo Yason. So in that situation, there's a payment that the man has to make if the woman doesn't die. So then there's a payment that you pay for the Dmei Vlados. So in that situation, the Tanoim say the following, the Tanya. Rav Yossi Omer, Nake Chaya. Yes, there's a payment that you have to pay for the Dmei Vlados. But you also can take into account the fact that he won't have to hire an OBGYN. He won't have to hire a midwife to have his wife give birth. So he's saving that small amount of money. So therefore, that can be deducted from the Dmei Vlados. That's the opinion of Yossi. And Ben Azai is, in addition, Ben Azai Omer, Nake Mizonos. The fact that this woman is in her pregnancy, she needs to eat more. So the husband, instead of giving her $100 a week from Mizonos, now has to give her $125 a week from Mizonos. So the fact that she's no longer pregnant, so the husband saves that extra 25 extra bucks a week that he gives her because she was pregnant. Now he doesn't have to give her. So Benazi says you can deduct that as well from the total damages of Dmei Vlados. Now, these also are just like the opinion that we brought down from Rishum ben Yehuda, that you can deduct the less damage in the vine because the grapes are no longer there. You can go and deduct from the besulin that she would have suffered anyway, that loss, from the total payment. Okay. Now the Gemara just has an aside. In between, Rav Yossi, who says, Nake Chaya, you can deduct the OBGYN, the midwife fee, versus Benazi, who said you can deduct the mizonos that you don't have to give her extra. So, according to Rav Yossi, who says that you don't have to pay the doctor's fees, that's going to be deducted, the midwife fees. So, certainly, kosher came to pay mizonos. So, you don't have to go and pay the mizonos. That's for sure, he holds that as well. However, Benazi may not hold like Rav Yossi. The one that says that you don't pay the extra food, well, maybe the food. Obviously, every pregnant woman needs the extra food. Not every woman necessarily needs a midwife that you have to pay for. Yes, maybe it says that every woman needs a midwife, but lav davka, you have to go and pay for the midwife. Maybe you could just instruct them. You're a midwife yourself, so you can instruct them what to do. So avol naki chayelo, not every woman has to pay for a midwife, because Benazi would explain, to Amale, the husband can go and say to the man that went and hit his wife and caused it a miscarry, it's a didi, my wife. She's a midwife. She's an expert. And therefore, she won't have to pay for a chaya. She'll get professional courtesy. She'll just instruct another woman what to do. Do this, do that. And therefore, she won't have to pay for it. So therefore, lav davka, the benaz that you says that you deduct mizonos, would agree that you also have to deduct the midwife fee. The person could say, listen, my wife wouldn't have needed the midwife fee. That concludes this little sugya. And now we go back to what we learned in yesterday's shir. In yesterday's shir, we had a person that had cut down somebody's palm tree. It was in a group of three palm trees. He cut down one, and the person went to the Reish Galusa, to Paskin, and the Reish Galusa said, you have to pay one-third of the value. He knew that area was worth 100 zuz, and he says, therefore, this tree was worth one-third of that, and you have to pay 33 and a third zuz. The person wasn't happy with that. He went to Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman said, no, we do this shisha methodology that we talked about in great detail in yesterday's shir. So now the Gemara comes back to that and says, Rav Papa, the Rav Huna Brei, the Rav Yeshua, these two great Amarayim, they paskin the Ovud Uvdo Kavasi, the Rav Nachman B'Shishim. They had a Maisa Shehoya, and they paskined it exactly like Rav Nachman did. You do the Shishim methodology that we talked about in great detail in yesterday's shir. Alternatively, you come to the same conclusion with the following version, Lishnachrin, who was said in another way, no different conclusion, Rav Papa, Rav Huna Brei, the Rav Yeshua, Shamu Dikla, they evaluated this palm tree, Agav Ketina Diara, based upon its evaluation as part of a land. And in fact, the Rith has the gears over here, Bishishim. So therefore, this second version is exactly like the first version. And they both paskin this Shishim methodology concept. And how do we paskin? The Gemara says, the Ilchasa, Kavasi, the Rav Papa, the Rav Huna, Berei, the Rav Yeshua, Bediklo, the Arma. We, in fact, follow these opinions of Rav Papa and Rav Huna, Rav Yeshua, that you follow the Shishi methodology when you're dealing with a Diklo, Arma, or. What is a Diklo, Arma, or? So Rashi elsewhere, and the Gemara in Shabbos tells us that this Diklo Armoa is Tumarim Roim Heim. It's a very, very poorly yielding dates from this tree. So it's a very inferior type of a tree. Rashi elsewhere says there in Shabbos, De'ein Mispashlos Yofe. Doesn't mature well, the dates don't mature well. So therefore, this tree is relatively insignificant, and therefore, you use the Shishin methodology. However, the Hilchos of Kavasi, the Reish Kalusa, we follow the Reish Kalusha's approach that you look at each tree individually when you're dealing with Bidiklo Parsa. What is a Diklo Parsa? So Rashi here tells us, Choshevu Ma'od. It's a very, very choshev a tree. Elsewhere, Rashi says, Tumarim Tovim Heim. It produces excellent Tumarim. Tumarim Tovim Mispashim Yofa. Tumarim that are very, very beautiful and very, very ripe. And these tamarim, the neishom bifnei atzmo, Rashi over here says. Therefore, each tree is so significant, it's evaluated on its own, and we don't use the shishin methodology for something so choshev. Now the Gemara continues and tells us the following story. Eliezer Ze'ira, he was the name of a great Talmud Chacham, we turn to the test on the bays, have a soyim misane uchme. He would wear black shoes. Rashi says, minag avelim. He was doing what was common for Avelim. As we'll see, he was mourning Yerushalayim. It was bad post-Churban, and he walked around like an Ovel, wearing black shoes. Now, the Mepharshim should bring down that every Ovel wore black shoes. So some suggest that, yes, Avelim wear black shoes, but sometimes they wear them, Avelim don't wear them polished, whereas everybody else wears them polished. Or the non-Avelim wear them with white shoelaces, and the Avelim wear them with black shoelaces. In any event, he clearly looked like he was a mourner. And the Koi B'shuk of the Nardoit is walking around the Shuk of Nardoit, and he met up with the Reish Kalusa's people. So Ashkuchu, the very Reish Kalusa, so the people of the house of Reish Kalusa met up with him, and they saw him dressed as an Ovel, and they said to him, Romulei, Maishno Hani Misani, why are you dressed like an Ovel? Why are you wearing shoes that make you look like an Ovel when none of us are wearing shoes that make us look like an Ovel? So he said, Amaluhu, to call Ma'av Vilna Yerushalayim, because I'm mourning Yerushalayim, and that's why I'm dressed as an Ovel. They said to him, whoa, who do you think you are that you should dress like that for Yerushalayim? Amulei, they said to him, At Chashivis, Lisabule Yerushalayim? Are you such a chosh of a person? It seemed that the custom was, before she went down, that only Gedolei Hador had the right to go and act like an Ovel over Yerushalayim, because they were actually the ones that had the power to reverse the Churban because of their learning and because of their Torah. And therefore, if it's not rebuilt in their time, they should feel it's their problem, and that's why they, Bedavka, should be an Avelus, more so than a regular person. So in any event, if somebody acts like an Ovel over Yerushalayim, so that sounds like a very arrogant person. That person thinks he's really something, that he has the right to mourn over Yerushalayim in this public way. So that's what they asked him. At Chashivas Liasavuli Yerushalayim? So Savra Yehura Haba, they thought he was a very arrogant person, and Asyuha, they took him, the Chavshua, they threw him in jail. How dare you go around being such an arrogant person? So he goes and yells at them, Amalu, he tells the servants of the Reish Kalusa, Gavarabana, I'm a great person. Now, very interesting, the Ben Yehuda says that he didn't want to benefit from his Torah learning. So he didn't say I'm a great Talmud Chacham. He said I'm a great person. Implication would be that he's a very rich person, or he's a very important person. Not that he's a Talmud Chacham. He didn't want to get out of jail, so to say, because he was a Talmud Chacham. Albeit, that's ultimately what happens. So they say to him, you think you're such a Talmud Chacham? Or Mulei, we know you didn't. How do we know you're such a big shot? How do we know you're such an important person that we shouldn't put you in jail? That you have the right to be Misabel al Yerushalayim? So Amalu, so he tells them, well, we can easily prove that. Oh, Atun Bo Minoy Milsa, either you ask me a question in learning, and if I can't answer it, then you know I'm a faker. If I can answer it, then you know I'm a Talmud Chacham. Oh, Anoyi Bo Minaychu Milsa, or if you want, if you prefer, I'll ask you a question, and if you can't answer it, then I must be the bigger Talmud Chacham. So they said, good, Gesundte, hey, Amulei, they said to him, no, boy, ask a question. We'll see how big a Talmud Chacham you are. So Amalu, so he tells to them, what's the halacha? And here's where we get into why the story is over here. Hi man, the cuts kufra. If somebody went down and cut down the kufra is the dates on a date tree. So my mishalim, how much does he have to pay for cutting down this kufra? Rashi says, but tomorrow kiboser b'yanovim. This is in an immature state, like the boser stage, halfway ripe stage by anovim. So this is called kufra when it comes to dates. So my mishalim, how much does he have to pay the person who we cut down his kufra? So Amulei, they said to him, mishalim, pay kufra. You pay for the kufra. They said, well, you cut out kufra, so you pay for kufra. Now Rashi points out, they're worthless. Rashi says in Dimei Kufra, ain't no klum li mocharat shop. Nobody's going to buy a half-ripened date. So therefore, it's worth nothing. So Eliezer Zira tells him, but they would have grown into tomorrow. So when you pay him the price of kufra, which is almost zilch, it's an extremely small amount, you really hurt this guy. The Nizak is getting very, very little money, compensation. The guy ruined his crop. So they said, Taki, you're right. So therefore, Amulei, they said, okay, we change our opinion. Mishalim Dimei Tamre. Yeah, they should pay the full price of Tvarim. So Eliezer Zira says back to them, that's also wrong. They didn't actually go and cut out full ripened Tvarim. They cut out these Kufra, which are like the immature type of dates. So it's not right that you're paying them only Kufra value, but it's not right to pay them full Tvarim value. So they were stumped. So Amulei, so the house of the Reish Gelusa, those people from the house of the Reish Gelusa said to him, no, Eliezer Zira, what do you say? Amulei, Amul or not, you tell us. So Amulei, he told them, we use the Shishim methodology. They weren't aware of that. The Shishim, you go and look at the field when it would be worth in relation to 60 fields, like we said yesterday, or 60 saw, or 60 tarkavs, or all the things that we went through in yesterday's Shishim, you use the 60 methodology. Amulei, so the Dvei Reish Gelusa, they weren't happy yet. They said, and who says you're right? Man Omar Kavosich, very nice what you're telling us. Does anybody hold like you? So he said, yeah, Amulei. So this Eliezer Zira told them, go and ask Shmuel. Shmuel's the Gadol HaDor. HaShmuel Chai, Shmuel's still alive. Ubeis Dino Kayam, and he's alive and well. Go and ask him, see what he says. So Shadru came to Shmuel. So they sent the letter to Shmuel and said, listen, what's the halacha here? And Shmuel responded to them, Amulei. Shapir Kamaluchu B'Shishim. Eliezer Zira is 100% right. We use the Shishim methodology, and in fact, he was 100% right. He's a big Talmud Chacham, Gavu Rabahu, Mishavkua. They let him go. He said, you're a person that's appropriate to be mourning over Yerushalayim. Okay, the Gemara continues by quoting the Mishnah, Rabbi Shimon Omer, Ochle Peros Gemur V'chule. Rabbi Shimon had said that if you ate the Peros when they were mature, so then you pay for the actual Peros. You don't use this Shishim methodology. Why? My timer. How come? So Gemara says, because look at the pasuk. It specifically used this lashon of you will go and eat in another field. And that was to compare this to another field. So you go and use this methodology, the Shishim methodology. Now, that's only true. That's only if it still requires the field. Now, that's immature fruit, still require the tree, the field. Hani, but in the case in the Mishnah, where Ochla Peros Gemurin, the Kiva the Lot Srichala saw that they no longer need the field. They are going to be able to be plucked right now. They no longer need the nutrition and sustenance of the tree. And therefore, Kiva the Lot Srichala saw they don't need the tree, they don't need the field anymore. Therefore, they're like a separate entity. As Tosus brings down, certainly, if somebody squished your box of strawberries, so you can't say, well, look at the field and evaluate the field. No, they're strawberries. They're picked already. So too, if it's ready to be picked, so therefore, these fully ripened fruits, we evaluate them as if they were actually detached from the tree. No, this is what they'd be worth in the market. That's what you have to pay. Saw for a saw, or shnei saws for shnei saws. So that's the way you pay. Like Rabbi Shimon says in the Mishnah, Ochle Peros Gemurim, you pay for actually what you destroyed and not this shishim evaluation with the field. Since it doesn't need the field anymore, it's considered detached, so to say, and you just pay for the actual damage. Now, how do we paskin? So Amar Rav Huna Bar Chiya, Amar Rav Yirmiyah Bar Abba, Rav Huna Bar Chiya said the name of Yirmiyah Bar Abba, that Rav paskined like two das yuchidim in this situation. Don Rav Kirby Meir, which we'll explain in a moment what case that is, and Pasak Hilchasa, Rashi explains the difference between Don, that's he judged in this case, and Pasak Hilchasa means he taught his Talmidim. Kilomar Lime the Talmidim, Shalachi Rabbi Shimon, Halacha Psuk Ladoris. This is the Halacha for all future generations, paskin like Rabbi Shimon. And that's our Rabbi Shimon over here, which we'll now go through the Gemara and explain. So when Rav Huna Bar Chiya said the name of Yirmiyah Rabba, go and Rav Paskin like Rav Meir, what case was that? Don Rav ki Rav Meir in the following situation, the Tanya. This is talking about a man who married a woman and all of his property is in lien for her ksuba. So he had, let's say, two fields, and he wants to sell the field. So if he doesn't say anything to get the wife's permission, so then the person who buys it knows that this could be, if he has no other properties available at the time, that the wife would collect the ksuba. So you know there's a lien on the ksuba. But the first person knows that there's a second property, and that could cover the ksuba. So he doesn't worry about buying the first property that will eventually be taken from him because the wife will need it to collect the ksuba, because he says there's other properties left behind. Now, when the husband went to sell this first property, he wanted his wife to give up her rights to it. He wanted her to remove the lien in order to make it easier for him to sell it. So, kasa l'rishon, he wanted to write in a caveat into the contract when he sold the first field to the first person that his wife wouldn't go collect from that field. However, v'lo chasvelo, but she didn't agree to it. But then, when he sold his second field to a second person, l'sheni, then the wife agreed, v'chasvelo. And she signed on to it, so to say, that yes, I'm not going to go and take my ksuba from that field, even if there is no other payment. Now, in this situation, the Tanakama, Rav Meir, says, Avda ksubasa. She in fact loses a ksuba if the husband dies and he has no money to pay a ksuba and he only has these two fields. So under normal circumstances, you would go to the latest sold field, in other words, the second field here, and she'd collect a ksuba from that second field. But here she had written and said that, no, I'm not going to go collect my ksuba from that field. Oh, so then you go to the first field. But the first field, the owner of that field says, listen, I left you a second field, and you could collect your ksuba from the second field. No, you decided not to go collect from the second field. That's your problem. It's not my problem. I left enough there. So therefore, I don't have to give you from the first field. And therefore, the Tanakhama of Meir says, of the ksubasa, lost the ksuba, because she signed on to the second one, which is the one she should have collected, that she won't take it. Now, that's the opinion of Meir, Divi Rav Meir. Rav Yehuda disagrees. Rav Yehuda Omer, no, Yecholi Shatomer. She can say, listen, the only reason I signed on to the second guy is because my husband was bothering me and I wanted to say, give him Nachas Ruach. So I said, okay, fine. Nachas Ruach Asisa Labali. Yecholi Shatomer. She could say, I only did this because I want to give my husband Nachas Ruach. He's bothering me to go and say it. So I said, okay, fine. Nachas Ruach Asisa Labali. Atem, Maluchem Olay. And therefore, I didn't really mean it. And therefore, I'm allowed to collect my ksuba from the second guy. Now, that is what Rav Yehuda says. But Rav Meir says, no. We don't think that that's the case, because if she really wanted to say Nachas Ruach Asisa Labali, she should have done it by the first guy also. For the first guy, Kosov L'Rishon V'lo Chos V'lo. So therefore, Rav Meir doesn't believe this, and therefore, Rav Paskins over here like Rav Meir. Now, in the second statement, we had said, U'pasach Hilchasok Rabbi Shimon. What is that referring to? Gemara says, Kihodetan. That's the following, which we learned in our Mishnah. Our Rabbi Shimon Omer that we just went through, Achla Peros Gemurin, if the animal ate Peros Gemurin, so then Mishalem is Peros Gemurin. Then you pay, as we just pointed out, for the full-fledged Peros, because Omer Ligzos Kegazos Domi, and it doesn't need the tree anymore, Ubiyeh B'Steacher doesn't apply, and therefore you pay the full-fledged amount of the damage to that fruit. Im saw, it was a saw's worth of damage, you pay a saw. Im sosayim, it was two saws worth of damage, sosayim, then you pay two saw of damage. Okay, next Mishnah. Mark continues, Hamagdish Bisoch Sede Chave Roshlo Birshus. If one makes a Godish is a pile. So he goes and puts inside the Nizak, we'll call it the Nizak, and puts it into his friend's yard. Shlo Birshus, he puts his grain in his friend's yard without permission. So let's put it into the example of Reuven puts grain into Shimon's yard, and then Shimon's animal, Bachalosa Behemto Shabalasada. Shimon's animal, Shimon's the owner of the yard, his animal goes and eats the fruits that Reuven put in there without permission. So as we've mentioned already many times, that's what we've had this Mishnah previously, Potter, the owner of the field, Shimon, doesn't have to pay anything for those fruits. He can say to him, hey, nobody gave you permission to put your fruits in my yard, and my animal's going to eat whatever's in my yard. And in fact, v'imhuska behen, and we had this previously, that Rav explains over here, it means if he slipped on the peros, because Rav holds that if he ate them and got sick, then you can't go and blame the person who brought the fruits there, because he could say, listen, your animal shouldn't have eaten it. But if he slipped on them, imhuska behen, if Shimon, the owner of the field, his animal slipped on the peros that Reuven put there without permission, so then Bala Godish Chayev, then Reuven, the owner of the pile of grain, is going to be Chayev. The Imhigdish Birishos, but if he put it there with permission, Reuven and Shimon, can I put it there? And Shimon said, yes, you can, so then Bala Sada would be Chayev. In that situation, the owner of the field would be Chayev to pay for the damage that was done to the grain, or if the grain went and hurt somebody else, then the owner of the field, since he gave permission to go put the grain there, would be chayav for the damage that was done to somebody else. Now, let us therefore say, the Gemara starts, Let us say that our Mishnah, the lo ki Rebbe, is not like the opinion of Rebbe. Now, we had this machlokas previously, that Rebbe holds that a person is not chayav to watch something, even though he gave permission for his friend to put it there, unless he specifically states, I will watch it for you. So there's like three levels according to Rebbe. Level number one is, I don't give you permission to put it in my yard. You put it there without my permission. Level number two is, I gave you permission to put it there, but hey, buyer beware, so to say. Caveat emptor. You want to put it there, you're still responsible for it, not me. And then there's a third level that says, yes, you can put it there, and I will watch it for you. And Rebbe is of the opinion that you're not chayiv to watch it for him unless you specifically stated so. But in our Mishnah here, it doesn't say that. So therefore, leima tinan de lo kerebi. Our Mishnah doesn't seem to be in accord with Rebbe's opinion, because the kerebi, if it was in fact accord with Rebbe's opinion, he should have said, and I will watch it for you. And it doesn't say that in our Mishnah. So the end of our Mishnah, it said that the Bala Gadish is going to be potter, and the Baal HaField, the Baal HaSodeh, he's going to be Chayiv. Shimon's going to be Chayiv, and not Reuven. So Shimon never said, I take responsibility for it. So our Mishnah is not like Rebbe. So Rav Papa says, no, our Mishnah could be like Rebbe as well. Amar Rav Papa, no, it could be like Rebbe, because Hocha Benotar Be'dore Askinan. We're dealing over here with a set watchman. This Shmira is done by one person. As Rashi points out in Notebe Dari, Shomer HaGronos, there was one guy that was set up to watch all the silos, all the Gronos. Shemin Hagam, the custom was, Oyolasos called B'nei HaBikor B'goren Echad. All the people with the surrounding fields, they couldn't afford each to have their own watchman in their own field, so they would go and put all their grain in the silos together. And therefore, one person would watch all of them. So, B'goren Echad, Zegedisho, V'Zegedisho. This is my part, that's your part. And they would appoint a shomer to watch all of them. And in this situation, Rebbe is molded, that when this person say gave permission, yeah, you can put your Gadish over here in the area of the other Gadishim, the Kivad Amalei Ayalu Gadosh, he says, yes, you can put it over there. It's implicit that he also therefore is saying, Ayal V'entelechahu. I am watching it for you when you put it there. So even Rebbe would agree in this situation, and that's what our Mishnah is talking about, where you had Bei Dore, you had a person over there who was the watchman, Benota Bei Dore, he was watching everybody's grain. And therefore, that's implicit that he's also going to take responsibility for it. And therefore, our Mishnah could be like Rebbe as well. Okay, next Mishnah. We had this previously as well. If a person sends a fire in the hands of a non-competent person, a cheresh, person can't speak and can't hear, and he's not considered mentally competent, the shota, again, a psychologically incompetent person, mentally incompetent person, a katan, by definition, he's not mature enough to be able to understand what he's doing. So therefore, all of these people are mentally incompetent, and therefore, if you give a be'era to them, and they go and damage your potter within the other. The person who sent them, the cheresh, the katan, always potter. They're not bardas. But the person who sent them, the flame with them, he's also going to be potter in a beis din. However, we had this previously, the chayv din in shemayim. But you obviously did something was wrong, and therefore you'll be held accountable in shemayim if you don't pay them back. However, sholach b'abikach, if Reuven sends a fire in the hands of Shimon, and Shimon's a bikach, and then it causes a damage, so then ha'bikach chayv, Shimon is chayv, not Reuven, even though Reuven sent them. And that's because the person, Shimon, should have been more careful. Ain't shliach l'dvar reveira. He can't say, well, Reuven asked me to go do this. No, you should know better. Direi Arav, Direi Atam, Mishomim. So therefore, you shouldn't have done anything with the fire that Reuven might have told you, and you're a pikeach, you should have watched it better, and therefore, anything that happens is your responsibility. Now, what happens if two people are involved in the fire damage? Echot HaVisr, one person brings the actual flame. The other person brings the wood, and we're dealing here with that the flame alone would not have gone and spread further without firewood. So the second person who brought the firewood really is responsible for the fire spreading. And therefore, only the second person is chayiv in this situation, the first person is not, because if only the first person was there, it never would have spread. Likewise, the first person now brings the wood. Now, nothing's going to happen with just wood there. It's the second person that brings the fire, and now it causes a lot of damage. So again, the second person is chayav, and maybe it's our chayav, because then he's the one that caused all the problems. What happens if ba acher the liba, and another person came along and fanned the flames? So then, hamalabe is chayav, the one who fanned the flames. He's the one that really spread the fire. So he's going to be chayav for any damages, and the first two, one that bought the flame, one that bought the firewood, they wouldn't have had a big fire without the guy fanning it, so therefore the one who fans it is going to be chayav. Libra saw Ruach, but if on its own, there would not have been able to be a fire over here that caused damage. And then either, Mepharshim discuss over here whether it was a normal wind or an unnormal wind. Some suggest it was only an unnormal wind that you'd be potter. In a normal wind, you would be chayiv. Others say, no, even in a normal wind, you wouldn't be chayiv because you didn't do the damage directly with your hands. So, libsoa ruach kulam p'turim. Let's make it nice and simple. If it was a hurricane that came along and you weren't expecting to have hurricanes over there, so then all three of these people would be potter. Bottom line is, without that wind, even though a person fanned it, even though a person brought wood, and even though the other person brought the flame, it would not have spread and caused the damage. That's our Mishnah. Gemara starts off and says, "Machlokes that we had previously in Reish Lakish of Yochanan. What exactly are we talking about when we say in the Mishnah Hasholeches Abeira Biyad Cherishot VeKotan?" So Reish Lakish says, "I'm Reish Lakish. Mishmei deChizkiah in the name of Chizkiah Lo Shana. We're only talking about Elishamasar Lo Gacheles VeLiba." That he gave them a call, he didn't give them something that could cause a flame, and then the Chayrishah of the cotton blew on it, and they caused the fire. In that situation, the owner of the call, the one who gave the call to the Chayrishah of the cotton, is going to be potter. But if he actually gave him a flame, of a muscle shall have this, so then he's chayim, because that was it. That was the actual damage, the fire, my timer, because myself called Garmulo, he gave them a flame, and therefore he caused the damage. When he gave them a call, unless you blow on it, nothing's going to happen. But you give him a flame, that's the damage. And therefore, Reish Lakish says, if you give him an actual flame, you're chayiv. Only when you give him a coal and they blew on it, are you going to be potter, midine yadam. Reb Yochanan disagrees. Reb Yochanan might know, even if you give him a flame, afilu masalo shohevis. Bottom line is, you didn't cause the damage. They did. Therefore, you're potter. Why, my timer? Because Tzev saw the cheirish garmelo. It was the grabbing of the cheirish. His Tzevis is a tongue, so his grabbing onto it, that's what led it to go and burn down whatever it burned down. So Tzevis of the Cheirish Garmelo, and therefore the owner of the flame is not actually Mechayev. Under what circumstances is the owner of the flame going to be actually Chayev? Below Mechayev, the owner of the flame will only be Chayev at Shiyim Salo Gavza. Rashi says Gavza is Kotzim. Basically means he gives him firewood. So he gives him a flame, and then he gives him firewood. We turn to Daf Samach Amud Aleph. Or he gives him Silsa. Rashi says, Eitz of Dakim. Again, firewood. Plus, he also gave him the Shraga. He gave him the flame. In that situation, in that situation, he caused this damage. So therefore, he's going to be chayev bidei adam. So in a base then. So therefore, this is the machlokes in the Shlokish of Yochanan. We had it previously, and this is the source where that machlokes comes from. This is a good break point. With this, we conclude today's share.